Hello and welcome once again to Temporal Culture War, where we're going to dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s while we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek Enterprise. I am Clayton Ashley.
And I'm Maddie Lipchansky.
We are watching this the week of October 24th, 2001, Terra Nova.
It's a bad episode.
Yeah, this spoilers, just a heads
up. Truly just a real... Our episode will be good.
Oh, yeah, because, to be clear.
Because we're professionals, but this episode is a real stinky pile of shit
and
that I hated.
Why again, is this script one of the ones they did so early in this? Anyway, we'll do some fun stuff first and talk about what the other options you had at the time instead of watching this piece of crap. You could have gone to the movies.
I love the movies.
And this is, I'm just going to give a little preview again of what has consistently wowed me about this era, even in this shadow of that crisp autumn morning. The kind of entertainment options you had at your local cinemaplex. The big one was The Last Castle. Have you heard of this?
I have no memory of this place.
Another one of those, and it frickin' starred Robert Redford, James Gandolfini, Delroy Lindo, and Mark Ruffalo as soldiers, and they got put in a prison, and it's like a prison revolution movie.
I've never...
Yeah. Me neither.
I'm looking. Incredible tagline here. A castle can only have one king.
The trailer's great. It definitely does feel like weirdly it could have been a movie written in the 1960s.
Yeah.
But it's all these fairly modern actors in it. And it seems like old Jimmy, rest in peace, he was doing this while he was Tony Soprano.
Yeah, of course.
This was right when he was kind of. That show was huge and only gaining steam. It was between the third and fourth seasons. So they were off. There's nothing airing after the spring 2001. No Sopranos.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't until the following fall it picked up again. So they had a lot of time to think about how culture changed. It was interesting to think about if Sopranos had come out at this time. But for being such a prescient show, to kind of get what we were talking about back then.
Yeah, a really incredible time on The Sopranos seasons 3 and 4. you got Ralphie Cifaretto, Joey Pants running around. It's good times. It's great stuff. Always a much better show than Star Trek Enterprise.
Yes, exactly.
In a lot of ways.
But you could have seen this movie, and it looks great. I'm gonna put it on the. I'm gonna make a letterboxed of all the. Incredible movies that I didn't know existed from this specific window after 9/11. Okay, this next one I'm very curious about, because this is definitely a big movie that I didn't know what it was about. I'm going to be straight up honest about that. K-Pax.
Okay. K-Pax. It's Kevin Spacey.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he was, I think it's one of those movies that he plays like an alien who is special. He's sort of like a man E.T.
Yes.
If memory serves, there's like a genre of movie, you know, like Starman or I guess E.T., where it's like it's an alien and they're like a child and they're special and they have powers. Is that what K-Pax is?
You are, based on the trailer, which is, again, all I know about this movie at this point. Based on the trailer, you are dead on the money.
Cool. Tremendous.
Things like he can see in spectrums of light that humans cannot see.
Cool. I forgot. There's also it's Kevin Spacey and Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
Starman himself.
Oh, that did not even occur to me.
This is like Starman Legacy.
Wow.
Just what they should have called. I bet it's not as good as a John Carpenter movie. Is what I'm guessing. K-Pax is not as good.
Yeah.
Starman, which rocks.
I'm definitely more interested in going back to The Last Castle than K-Pax. An interesting thing to think about this being a movie that was a heartfelt feel good movie people would have, you know, turned to in this time.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like a huge hit.
Yeah. It was
it made its budget.
Mm-hmm.
Good for K-Pax.
Good for K-Pax.
Good for K-Pax.
Another one, riding in the car with riding in cars with boys.
Riding in cars with boys. That's who did that? That's Drew, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's Drew Barrymore vehicle.
And, it's the one of Steve. It's the one of Steve's on.
Yeah,
is the one that, right? Yes. Oh, here's the thing. I love Steve Zahn, and I'll watch Steve Zahn in anything. I got nothing bad to say about Steve Zahn.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, I don't know. Holy shit, it takes place in Wallingford, Connecticut, which is not too far from where I grew up.
Oh, okay, that's nice.
Cool. There's not a lot of movies set in New Haven County.
I feel like this is the second movie you've mentioned was probably
maybe
set a film near you or something.
Yeah, maybe. Well, it's a real Southwestern Connecticut time and culture, I guess.
And another one of these movies, when I kind of looked it up, and it's like, oh yeah, this is like feels like a prime example of the good girls don't have abortions trope, the movie.
Yes.
Just because for some reason that was on the point of discussion on the last episode.
Yeah, but this is also like, yeah, I mean, it is a good girls don't have abortions, but it's also like, it's Penny Marshall's last feature film.
Mm.
It is a James L. Brooks production. It's got an incredible cast. It's Drew Barrymore, Steve Zahn, Brittany Murphy, Lorraine Bracco,
her dad,
James Woods. Fucking, it's got a Hans Zimmer score.
Yeah, that's the
they used to like put this. This is a movie. It's a movie that is on film, and it's a movie.
It's a movie. That's a thing I say that is the least descriptive way to describe something, but it's a movie-ass movie.
It's a movie-ass movie. But there's nothing like sick about this in the way that a lot of the movies that come out later are like,
yes,
psychotic.
It has some of those puritanical vibes of American culture going back centuries.
Yeah, this is like this is still we're getting at this point in fall 2001. We are still experiencing cultural products of the long 90s.
Yeah.
You know, like this is a 1998 ass movie.
But you know what else it was? Late October in 2001.
What do you got?
The Spooky Times.
Oh, sure.
So I'm just curious, what do you think were the horror movies coming out?
In 2001?
I got two here that were like real low on the list, but they did like premiere around this time and they got in some charts.
Okay. I feel like this is around the time that like, this is when Ghosts of Mars came out.
Ooh, it's got ghosts in the title. Ooh.
Ooh. Okay. Okay. What do we got? What do we got?
13 ghosts.
13 ghosts.
We got a haunted house. It kind of looks awesome, actually. It's a great looking practical set. It's about an inheritance, yeah. You know, people gotta go there.
I recall the title in the poster. I never saw this movie. Yeah. I have a really, really vivid memory of it being spelled THIR13EN on the poster.
Of course.
So 13N ghosts.
Yes, yes. How many ghosts are there?
26.
30. So it's got Matthew Lillard, Tony Shalhoub,
okay. Classic,
In-Depth Davids. It seems like a fun time. Maybe a bit of a campier horror movie. And I kind of want to revisit it.
It's an incredible filmography by this guy, Stephen Beck, who directed two movies. This movie in 2001, 13 Ghosts, and then 2002's Ghost Ship. And then never again.
He had some ideas about ghosts, wanted to get them out there, and he was done.
He had two ideas. He's like, well, you had one idea, it's ghosts. And they're like, what's your ghost idea? And he's like, okay, I got two. I got house, and I got boat. We never got the end of the trilogy, which is, of course, ghost, house, boat.
Ghost.
I
was going to go into the air, but I like that.
Ghost blimp.
It's got to have a call back to the first.
Yeah.
Movie.
I mean, I guess also around this time was Jason X, which is sort of like ghost spaceship.
Ghost spaceship. Yeah.
Right. When did Jason X come out? That's got to be around now, I think.
I wonder.
Jason X comes out next spring. So okay. we'll get to it.
We'll get
eventually.
To it. Oh yeah. Why a springtime movie? Interesting.
That's a very weird time to put on a Jason movie.
But back in Halloween 2001, you could also see From Hell.
Oh.
A young Johnny Depp. Dump Depp.
call him Johnny Dump. I mean, listen, that's, I think canonically we can refer to him as that.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. So yeah. Johnny Dump, he is in this, I think there's like, this was the era of the techno gothic. You got Thumpin' Beats and Victorian Britain.
This is based on my least favorite Alan Moore book.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh no.
It's fine. I mean, listen, it's got everybody. It's got Johnny Dump. It's got Heather Graham.
It also has, and maybe this is the graphic novel connection I didn't realize, is it has the worst looking spooky bloody font in the trailer. And there was just something very funny to me about that. Because this is, you know, when digital technology, you could see when they really cheaped out on it and they were just using like a default font or something.
I do think a lot about how bad the CGI looked in movies in this time specifically. Mm-hmm. Not like CGI looks good all the time now, but like, you know, it's something that has to be deployed with care and always has been. But it's very funny to watch movies from this time and be like, oh, well, that's just what they had. But you watch, you know, there's like CGI in Jurassic Park and it looks incredible.
Of course.
Wow. Heather Graham looks woefully miscast in this.
The whole thing doesn't seem cohesive. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, this also looks like when did Sleepy Hollow was before this, right?
I thought that was a 90s.
Yeah. I mean, I'm almost positive. Yeah. So like, it looks like they're trying to catch some of that Sleepy Hollow heat off old Johnny Dumps here.
But also,
which like a better movie.
We're getting to the era of Blade and Underworld. I feel like this isn't the only one of these techno gothics from this era. I'll just go through music quickly, 'cause I just didn't have much new on there other than an update that Alicia Keys Fallen still on top.
Listen, people were just really, really bumping that, thinking about, you know, where culture was at and what was going on, where America, our decline as an empire was anything but, you know, fallen.
Mm-hmm.
Straight down.
Well, but we did get patriotic. And the only thing I noted on there was that Whitney Houston's version of the Star Spangled Banner, what number was it? It was like 7 or something.
What?
Imagine
going to the Sam Goody or the FYE or whatever. If you're a child, those are record stores. Going there and purchasing like the CD single of Whitney Houston singing the national anthem, which is what had to happen for this to be on the Billboard, for it to chart, right? Like, it's not just radio play. Also, what the fuck radio station is just playing the national anthem?
Yeah, so that's the thing I'm trying to like kind of figure out about this. Is it like
when you listen to a baseball game, do they count that?
Okay. Like, sorry, hot off the presses from October 27, 2001. Actually, I'm Real was on top. I don't want to take that away from Jennifer.
Leave. Jennifer Lopez has had a hard enough time.
But
we don't need to take anything from her.
Fallen was number 2.
Okay.
But back
would
to
you
the
say
Star Spangled Banner.
Fell.
Star Spangled Banner was number 6.
That is okay. So we have finally cracked sort of the American mind disease of 2001 has finally struck the Billboard chart.
Because it was 13 last week.
I can't believe I missed that. That's crazy. I mean, that's just like, I don't understand. Imagine it's not a good song.
I was gonna say perennial,
like sitting
point.
It's not a thing to sit around listening to, right?
It's not especially pretty. Again,
no.
You know, America the Beautiful. It's not perfect, but it would be. It's a much nicer sounding song.
Absolutely, demented.
So TV also, it was tough to find a like specific Nielsen rating for this week. They're a little spotty. So I decided to, because I stumbled on this thing where I could see the exact kind of TV guide of what was on at that time.
Ooh.
So just to tell you like exactly what you could have turned the channel to instead of this, again, foreshadowing awful episode of Star Trek. You could have turned to NBC and watched Ed.
Beautiful Ed.
That's
a show we all love and remember, Ed.
I noticed it had Michael Ian Black in the cast, but other than that,
Michael Ian Black was on Ed. That's the only thing I remember about Ed. And that it starred a guy named, I believe, in the fiction of the show, his name was Ed.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or Edward. Sure.
They revealed that in the second season.
It was one of those early puzzle box shows.
Yeah, actually, the funny thing here is what, you know, NBC's got the Puzzle Box show. CBS has got news and reality TV. You got 60 Minutes 2, the sequel. And you got The Amazing Race.
Oh.
So
that was a fairly new addition to the lineup, I believe Amazing Race was.
Something that felt like it had definitely that Survivor DNA.
Yes.
But trying to, like, I think, maybe ground it a bit more. Something people could imagine themselves doing a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've watched some Amazing Race. I find it moderately compelling, but then also so just like profoundly stupid. It's got like a Wheel of Fortune disease, where they just, the people they find to do it seem like they've never left their own homes before.
Huh. You know? Oh, okay. I was curious.
It seems like the first time these people have ever interacted with anything, and so, let alone another country.
Yeah, just by how baffling some things can seem to them.
Yeah, like they lived in a, like they got two people and they lived in a pod with each other and that's it. And they've been like sort of like, you can still see the sort of nutrient goo dripping off of them as they shamble across my television screen.
Okay, now I see the visual. It's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't want to watch that on CBS, you could turn to WB and enjoy Dawson's Creek and then some Felicity.
See, now we're talking. This is classics of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You got Dawson Creek, that's early Katie Holmes. You got Michelle Williams, who was too good for that show, like severely. And Felicity, beautiful Carrie, what's her name? You know, Carrie Felicity.
What was the opening theme to Dawson's Creek? Is that a song?
That was I Don't Want to Wait for My Life to Be Over by, yes. What's her name?
Paula Cole.
I don't want to wait. Paula Cole for my life. My sister had the CD, and I did have to listen to it a lot on my way to school. But I got really into it because it's not a bad album. I'll be honest. Not a bad album. Paula Cole.
I love that.
Yeah.
Nothing on Fox, really, for some reason. They were on Thursdays. I guess they just didn't have enough content, so they're just running reruns of 70s Show and Titus. Titus. I don't know what
Titus.
It is.
I recall the show Titus.
What is it? I didn't care to look because it was a rerun.
It was a show about a guy that was like, I don't fit in with, it was like a dark comedy.
Oh.
Okay. That was like, what was the name of the guy? Yeah, Christopher Titus was like a comedian that was doing it. And like the show is just sort of like about a guy who like has a custom car shop.
Okay.
And he's just like, and he's got a dumb family.
I'm assembling it in my mind now. I can see it.
But it's like, you know, it's like edgy.
It's Fox.
That's
what Fox was at the time. They were the little edgy.
I'm finding that Fox was not that edgy and banned a two-part episode made in the months after September 11th that centers on the premise that the government believes Titus and his family are terrorists.
Oh my God!
Which they made after 9/11 and Fox would not air it.
That, I now have to see this lost episode of Titus, the show I just learned about.
Yeah, that's incredible. It was definitely, I believe, one where he would come out and do like talk to camera before the show. I for some reason watched that show when it was on. Don't know why.
Because it was on.
This is sort of a time in my life when I would just watch TV because it was on and I would just watch whatever, including, I suppose, the show Titus, which I have a lot of memories of. The logo being like cool, like 90s car flames with the word Titus over them.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. It's the sort of stuff I remember.
Well, I'm so sorry for you.
It's okay. You've sort of like, I've bitten into sort of like a very unfortunate Madeline here, and I'm being rocketed back through my own, and I feel as if I'm on my parents' couch again.
I did not expect, of all the things I jotted down here, for it to be Titus. I really did.
Titus.
Didn't. So I've got news here, and I was just kind of glancing at it, and I realized that it's actually sort of some like really poorly written lyrics to a continuation of We Didn't Start the Fire.
Okay, what do we
it's
got?
Like, IRA is disarming, assault on Taliban in Afghanistan starts. Enron tries to dismiss financial doubts.
Sure.
The budget surplus is disappearing.
Uh-huh.
We Sick. Didn't start the fire. Yeah. Like, yeah. So yeah, all that stuff was happening. And then also this thing where it was just a little bit of a one of those little coinky dinks of being thrown back into something where we have a U.S. politician who everyone was hating on for saying we should be kind of careful about the air campaign in Afghanistan because it plays into the stereotypical criticism of us as being high-tech bullies that think we can just do from the air from wherever we want, and it builds the case against us, blah, 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 blah. Turns out this was Joe Biden.
Sure.
And then, like, you know, after that, he says, by the way, Bush's handling of it is great. He's going to go down as a great president. So don't think he gets
that. Yeah, listen, Joe Biden, who's wonderful and has never done anything wrong. I love you, President Biden.
The coinky dink is that literally 4 days later, the U.S. hits a Red Cross compound accidentally.
Oh, sure. Accidentally.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But awesome. That was the news.
Wow. Depressing. Well, sorry to hear about all of that.
All of that. Shall we pick up our spirits and enjoy a little Star Trek? Because nothing else is good on the TV.
Yeah, let's experience what Brannon Braga later called his least favorite episode of the show. I believe. Yeah, in a 2011 interview, Brannon Braga cited this as his least favorite episode for the entirety of Enterprise. He described the installment as, quote, terrible, and one of several first season, quote, mediocre scripts.
Mediocre scripts. I'm surprised he even blames that at all, because it's the main thing he has a hand in. But
yeah, and it's, you know, he says not a bad concept, but a bad episode, and I believe I agree with him there. This would be a great seventh season episode of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
Where it's like, what have we done? We have to reckon with it.
A series that notably does a good job playing with U.S. or like human history and how it might intersect with the actual Star Trek timeline.
Uh-huh. All right.
This one, not so, much.
not so much. Fun fact about this episode, it was directed by LeVar Burton.
Yeah, I saw that and made me excited.
Of Geordi fame. No, it should never make you excited when you see someone from Star Trek directing a Star Trek episode, because they're often not good at it.
Yeah. I think maybe it's just because I like what Frakes did, and I think I like what Frakes did in First Contact, but...
No. But, like, Frakes, like, on some level, I think Frakes at that point had directed a bunch of episodes, and he had, like, an idea. And also, like, a show like Next Generation, they let the cast members start directing like way dip into the run of the show, so it's like humming along and it's like, you know, on rails on some level, but often I find the direction of those episodes very sort of boring. Anyways, so this episode opens up right away with, there's no cold open or anything, they're just like, it's the plot of the episode immediately. They are on their way towards the planet Terra Nova, which is also the title of the episode, which is a really boring thing to name a new planet, to just call it New Planet in Latin. Very creative stuff by the colonists of the USS Conestoga. But it's basically like the, you know, what's the, it's like the Jamestown.
Roanoke.
It's like, yeah, it is the Roanoke of the Earth space program, where it's like one of the first ever colonies on a new planet, maybe the first, and everybody disappeared. It was like 9 years to get there, 9 years back before the advent of warp.
Or like good warp, I guess.
Yeah, what are they at warp? Four? Five?
They're like four. They're always getting close to five right now. Like,
yeah, they want to do five. They're at a 5K bullshit. Yeah. But like at warp 1 to 4, it is a 9 year trip. But the Mayweather, Travis, the pilot who was born in space and raised in space, he is a quote-unquote boomer. That's fucking God damn it. This is just more... This is like one of... The world building is so late. Every time they have a new...
Can I talk about one of the war building things?
Sure.
Just because I read so many books where there's a colony and a moon, and it's like, what do they call it?
Yeah.
What do they call it? Armstrong City, you know? Mm-hmm, it's New Berlin. New Berlin.
Stupid.
Why? I know that some specific Germans had to do with the space program. Are we honoring them? Okay.
Yeah.
I said my piece.
I don't know. Jesus. Yeah. And like, you know, they were, but Mayweather's obsessed with it because he was born and raised in space, and it's a thing people in space are very obsessed with the idea of being a colonist, but everyone had disappeared after getting an argument with like Earth Command. No one knows what happened to them.
Oh, also, the specific argument was that they didn't want another 200 people coming to their planet.
They don't really dig into that very much.
Is it a small planet? Like,
it seemed like one guy. I mean, the planet does seem to have one town on it.
Yeah.
This is classic Star Trek stuff where it's like, we've gone to Terra Nova and to their one city, Terra Nova City, which on it exists one culture.
And I guess to me, the thing that why that was sticking out to me is like, why would Earth care what this little town thinks? It's like, okay, we're going to go to the other side of the planet. You'll literally never hear from us.
It seems like a plot contrivance.
Anyway.
To me. After a couple of unfriendly sort of communiques from the planet, they cut off all contact, and the Enterprise is going to go see what happened because no one else
ever has
had 18 years to go check, which makes sense. That's fine. Anyways, so they get there, and there is just like, it's empty. And they're like, oh, maybe they left. And it's like, no, they disassembled the ship to make the town. Which is still there.
Yeah. And their welcome mats are still there. They brought their own welcome mats.
The welcome bulkhead is still there. And they're walking around the town, and almost immediately they see some like rustling.
Yeah.
And like you see like a weird guy running, and they start running after the guy, and he runs into a cave. Oh, also crucially, sorry. The site is irradiated on some level. In a way, but they're like, it's radioactive here.
A little bit. Just a little bit.
It should be fine for you to be here for like the length of an episode on UPN, but not to stay forever. And they're like, okay, well, I guess we just had the one episode, so we'll chill out here with no suits or anything.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. Radiation is fine.
We have space suits, but eh.
No, I can't put them on. That costs money. But they follow this running guy into a cave, and there's like a bunch of strange looking cavemen in there. Malcolm gets shot with something in the leg, and they grab him and drag him off.
Again, the security officer just doing a bang up job.
An awesome job. Everybody else runs away and goes back to the shuttle pod. And T'Pol is just like, you know, those were humans, right? Which is like, you wouldn't be able to, I mean, like, listen, if I was there, I'd be like, those were humans for sure. But, I guess if you live in the Star Trek universe and everyone kind of looks like a human being covered in mud a little bit.
Yeah. I think it was funny that like their specific way they made them look like quote unquote aliens is that they put a bunch of dried mud on their foreheads.
Yes.
I don't
know, dried mud. They're covered in dried mud, and they're wearing like, they're wearing like the big shoulder pads that the bad guys in Galaxy Quest have on.
Yeah.
It's like very.
But I don't know if like the bumps of the mud on their head is supposed to be like, oh, it's like the ridges that any simple Star Trek alien has on their head, which is why they got so confused.
Possibly. They go back to the Enterprise. They just leave.
They just leave them.
Reed in a cave. They go back to the ship.
Before they check a scan and be like, yeah, he's fine.
He's fine. They know where he is. They can't get to him with the transporter, but he's fine. So they go to the ship, and it looks like everybody's living underground, and the earth, like the planet's actual like geology is like unstable, and there's like a lot of collapses all the time.
Huge cave networks underground.
Huge cave networks, but there's like this radiation. Everyone lives underground. Like, but the whole time Archer is like, we gotta talk to them. You know, we gotta figure out what's going on with these cave people. And then he grabs Phlox and he says, you come with me because you are a chiller and you'll be recognized as such by any culture.
Maybe the episode will be better.
Maybe this episode will be better if you, Dr. Phlox, was around because you kick ass and everybody loves you.
It's a little better once he's there.
It does pick up because he is, as I mentioned, a chiller. But they get there. They just kind of like wander around the forest until they get found again.
Yelling.
For people who live underground, they sure are above ground a lot, just FYI. But they're just like in the forest yelling. And the two guys, two of the mud people come get them. And they are taken underground to Reed. one of the people approaches, and it is the doctor from The Mummy. If you recall.
I didn't. Oh my god.
Oh, it's what's his name? Is Eric Eric Avari.
I couldn't tell under all the makeup.
Yeah, under all the mud. But that guy, he's the doctor from fucking The Mummy.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah, he's a cool guy.
I have to imagine every actor does love the bit, like, I was on a Star Trek, you know?
Yeah.
Punch that card.
Yeah. For sure. Like, even very famous actors would be like, put me in the makeup for one episode.
Yeah.
You had fucking Jason Alexander on Voyager during Seinfeld.
What?
It's crazy. He plays like a mind alien who's very smart.
Of course.
And he's got a big old forehead, and he's like a trickster. And it's Jason Alexander having the time of his life.
I can only imagine.
And I was looking into it once, and I think it was because he wanted to be on Star Trek very badly.
That's the best. That is the best kind of person to get on Star Trek, honestly. It's,
yeah, of course,
it's a shame,
of course, of course. Admit, yeah, yeah, yeah. I want to do some capering around.
Yeah.
But Eric Avari, who's... you don't have his name yet, I don't think.
Can we still talk? Starts, can we just keep talking about Voyager? I don't know. It's a
little yeah. but he starts yelling at Archer and all them, and he's like, "You made the poison rain come down." And Archer's like, "No, it was probably radiation, which we don't know how that got here. But also, you're human."
By the way.
By the way, you are human, and he takes them to meet his mommy.
His go before.
That's right. His go before. Oh yeah, they talk in a pidgin English that is truly the laziest shit on earth.
See, I like that they tried.
But again, great idea, bad execution, the Star Trek Enterprise fucking motto, where it's like they had a cool idea, which is like, oh yeah, like for reasons we find out in a minute in the episode, like these people were all like cut off from society as children.
Mm-hmm.
And of course their language becomes weird. They're like the kids in Thunderdome, right?
Yeah.
So like they're going to talk crazy. But again, the best they get is their mom is called the go before. And shale is when something's bad, because like shale rock, it chips easily.
Oh, okay. So it's just a catch-all. I got, yeah. Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's what shale means.
I'm
pretty sure. Yeah. But his go-before, Nadette, which you find out later, her name is like Bernadette. It's like fucking god damn it, guys. This is some real V'ger stuff. if you've seen Star Trek 1, the motion picture. But they find Nadette, and she's sick with lung cancer. And Phlox is like, this lady's got lung cancer, but that's a solved problem, actually. I'll get her back to the ship,
mm-hmm.
which is fun for me to think about. She's like, yeah, we solved lung cancer, actually.
Yeah, that's not a problem.
It's an injection.
It's like 5 hours.
Yeah, we put you in like a CAT scan, then we inject you. But they, the guy, the mummy doctor, you don't know his name yet, I don't think.
I actually kept thinking about it, and I I'm just not sure.
We eventually find out his name is Jamin.
Jamin.
Like Benjamin.
Benjamin.
I'm assuming, I guess. Ugh, this is so stupid.
So the thing with the language that I thought, like, okay, I get it. Like, I'm reading a science book, sci-fi book right now that is, you know, technically humans after 1,000 years and they're still using perfect English. And I get that it's like, sometimes an author wants to do that and other times, like, human English from like about 100 to 200 years from ago would sound really hard to understand, and we just don't do that in movies for reasons.
Yeah, I mean, for instance, like, that 200 years ago they didn't say cool phrases like 200 years from ago which is a cool way to say that.
But I like when they replace something like the word hungry with is your belly hollow.
See, that's cool. Like, that's good.
Like, let's make it more complicated. Let's use more words to describe this thing.
Yeah, I mean, because they can't just replace everything with baby talk, because then it'd be like, are you hungry?
It should have been. That's the thing.
Are you hungry? Yeah. everyone should just talk like the way you go insane when you're like in an apartment with someone for a long time.
Yeah.
So they take her up to the ship, but a sign of keeping each other honest, they leave Reed in the cave again.
He's like, whatever, sure.
Poor Reed is just in a cave this episode, bleeding out of his leg. And they're just like, yeah, man, you live in a cave now. We actually need this.
He's on that.
I gotta take this mud woman to the ship. so you have to stay here bleeding.
Here's some future drugs. Just hang out.
Yeah. So they go to the ship, they go to the doctor's office on the ship, and Archer shows them a bunch of like photos of the colony that they were looking through at the beginning of the episode.
They look like
photos from the Dust Bowl. It's like, I feel like photo technology probably had a nice camera when you went.
But not in the year 2001.
Not in the year. Yeah, and he's like showing them photos of this like on the screens in the med bay, which are like just flat screen TVs. Mm-hmm. They're just like straight up like unadorned, undecorated, just a flat screen TV in the bay, mm-hmm. which I think is cool. He starts showing these photos. Jammin freaks out, and he says, "Make your drawings go away," or something to that extent. Just like, all right, man. Okay. Archer's like, fine, I'll go. While Phlox is like curing this lady of lung cancer. And then T'Pol and Tucker are like, oh, it was an asteroid hit and there's a debris cloud. And that's why they're like last transmissions couldn't get out. And that's why like there's all the radiation.
And again, that kernel of a good idea. I like this idea that after like a, you know, not a generation ship, but a really long distance space travel, they get there. And then just a luck of the draw, something like that happens.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, a cosmic chance. It's space. It's unpredictable.
Yeah. Like and then that. Everybody like everyone has to go underground and like all the parents die and the children survive, which is what happened. And now you got this weird underground society of children that grew up. It's cool. And that's a good idea. The execution of my go before and my name is Jammin is like, I don't know. Oh yeah. There's and we cut back to Reed.
Oh yes.
In the cave talking to his guard. Trying to charm his guard. And his guard is trying to eat a turtle.
The digger.
They call them diggers, which is again, great work on the world building guys.
Did they say
it is a turtle that lives underground. It's called a digger.
I just assumed it was a rat. Did we see it? Did I miss the turtle thing?
You see it. You see a bunch of the shells.
Oh, that's what they. Okay.
And it's a real turtle shell looking thing. And that's also like what their body armor is made of, like the shoulder pads or the shells.
Okay.
It seems like their whole lifestyle is digger based.
I was wondering why the cool looking body armor. Okay. This makes
sense. Yeah, they didn't really.
Now.
Yeah. Oh, and he asked Reed if his belly is hollow, and he gives him some of the meat from the turtle. And Reed is like, this shit is undercooked, man. And the guy's like, humans are weak. And then he's like, this is going to be bad. And then it's just a long, slow tracking shot of a bunch of people playing ocarinas.
Yeah.
Which was, again, this is like some long 90s stuff. It's like people are playing Moncala, mm-hmm. playing an ocarina. You know, they got a rain stick, listening to Whale Song.
From Myst or something.
Yeah. And it's just like, but everyone like calms down because they're listening to ocarina music.
It's great. I calmed down.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things where like the diegetic music sounded nothing like the music that was playing. Like it didn't look like that's what they could be playing at all.
Right.
You know, like and there's this like weird friction between what you were seeing and what you were hearing, like in a jukebox musical. But it's fine. It's TV.
You know,
can't
maybe
make
those
it all perfect.
Weird alien shells make strangely stereo produced sound.
Yeah, and then yeah, like well, I was saying, on the ship they figure out. That this is like all the parents died and all the children like went underground. So there's been like two or three generations of kids being like very rudimentarily educated and they hate everyone from off world. Because the last adult they remember was the guy like firing at the new colony ship that came.
Okay. I was really trying to figure out, I listened to it twice, this like recording and then their explanation of what was happening. And so we got Logan, he's the opposition, and he was threatening to attack a new ship. But then this was a recording of the captain, the head of the colony, saying that half of the people are dead in an attack, and everyone else is getting sick, except the children. And I was confused as to, like, do they think the asteroid was an attack? Or was...
So I think what happened was the colonists... There was, like, some internal thing with the colonists where they couldn't... Some of them wanted more colonists, some of them didn't. And the opposition guy was like, Earth is going to take the planet by force. And they thought the asteroid was an attack by Earth. So then they shot the other ship out of the air. And then because of the impact, all the radiation killed the adults and left the children surviving. That's the best I could figure.
Okay. So there was another ship? I think that was
the other ship got there.
Okay, I think that's what I was confused, is that I just missed this part about another ship having even gotten there.
Or maybe it never even got there, I don't know.
Because then I went to the Wikipedia and somebody was saying, like, one of the critics was like, I wanted more explanation of why they didn't want more people on their colony, so it seemed like maybe the show didn't explain it either.
Certainly seems like it. And then things get even worse, where Phlox is like, the water is poison. Everybody's going to die if they stay there. And Archer's like trying to get the mummy doctor and his mommy to tell everyone to leave, and they're like, no.
Remember,
and Archer shows, Archer shows her a photo of Bernadette Fuller and her mother, but they don't, even them, that doesn't get really through to them. And Jammin is like, no, I'm just gonna get out of here. I want to go back home. You gotta take me home. I don't believe you. You're trying to take my house away from me. I'm not moving, even though the water's poison.
And I think he also threatens to kill Malcolm.
He very much does.
To gut him, because that's the word they use.
Yeah, because they've they love to gut the diggers. And then T'Pol is like, hey, what if we just like shoot them until they leave? Like stun grenades is what she said,
so,
right?
I felt like this was this one scene that was better than it had any right to be in this episode.
Yeah.
And so this is why. Is it like, it starts out with Archer just being pissed and like, I want to save them. We got to save them. And T'Pol's like, okay, we could just teleport a bunch of stun grenades in there and knock them all out. And he's like, that's ridiculous. Then we'd have to make them prisoners. And how are we going to, you know, take them back to Earth? And T'Pol's like, you're right. Of course, what would happen if you convinced them and got them back to Earth? What then?
Right, like they have a culture. Yeah. They are, like, this is like, ooh, gets into sticky Prime Directive territory. A thing that doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
They keep dancing around it for episodes over and over and over and over and over.
And it's mainly just because, like, she is also better than this show has any right to be. Like, I thought played this well. I honestly forgot that. I thought she was just like, yeah, let's kill him or let's knock him out and take him home. I didn't think she was going to try to make a grander point. And maybe it's because the floor was so low for this episode that this stood out as something as like finally some meat. But yeah, it's still just a pretty basic argument, early argument of this Prime Directive that doesn't.
It's very funny because this whole argument that they're having is the premise of a fucking Next Gen episode where Worf's brother, Worf's human brother,
right,
played by fucking Paulie from Goodfellas. What's his name?
Yeah.
Paul Sorvino comes on and he's like, he like dresses up as an alien to like get them to leave and he's like, take them to the holosuite to like pretend like they're migrating somewhere.
Yes. I knew I was having flashbacks to like, wait, don't they get them on like a holo ship to transport them?
Yeah. They do that on Next Generation. There's a whole episode where it's just that.
Wow.
And a much better episode that's about Worf and his weird brother.
Yeah, of course.
And it's Paul Sorvino. But R.I.P. But they finally, they go back down to the planet and they're still trying to convince Jammin and the Debt to talk about it with the others.
Did you see this episode of TNG? We just want to do that. We just want to like take you somewhere.
Yeah, they show them the episode. Because obviously TNG has not happened yet in the Enterprise universe, but the show is obviously already aired.
Yeah, exactly. That's how it works.
Time is a flat circle. Anyways, they try to land on the planet and a sinkhole opens up under it.
Which I was a little surprised by. I had forgotten the plot point that the, you know, unstable ground. They got me there.
Yeah, they really, I mean, they definitely did the thing where like, we have to put it in the earlier in the episode where the ground is unstable.
Yeah.
Even if it doesn't really come up until the end again.
Also, we know and this. Let's land right on the town.
Yeah, let's just land right in the town in our big heavy spaceship. Big sinkhole opens up, and then a bunch of fucking. There's a real problem in these early episodes. I feel like we're like the last third of the episode is just like unintelligible action.
Yes,
where it's
exactly.
Like stuff just keeps happening. They're always in a fucking cave.
It's pretty cheap. It's
just,
they don't have a lot of budget for it.
They have a lot of budget. There's like a guy who's like trapped under a tree. They gotta bust out the tree. They gotta like. What is it? There's like a guy with a broken leg. They got to get the tree off the broken leg man.
It's just it's drama constructed right at the moment. Like none of this mattered until now. There was
And it's all to like get them to cooperate with each other to like save one of the Novans' lives.
was that his son?
Lives.
That the mummy doctor's son? Is that why it was extra important? I can't remember if he yelled that or not.
Maybe. I don't think so.
It was just a character that we it was like, we have to save him.
And yeah, it says here that his name is Akari.
Cool.
He's just a guy. Okay. He's got, according to this photo that I found of him, he's got a bunch of fucking mud on his face, and he's some guy with a bunch of mud on his goddamn face.
It's like you could have had some tension of like maybe somebody else has gotten sick and they once again.
Nope.
I don't know.
No, there's just action happens, because otherwise you're going to lose Chad Truck of Centralia, Kansas, as we all know.
And sinkholes are important to him.
He demands action. There's been too much yapping on this one. We got to get fucking sinkholes. We got to get a guy breaking his leg.
That opened up in my town. A sinkhole opened up. It was terrible. The whole town was there. Yeah,
that's right. So he's watching this like, I can relate.
Oh, he's like, I hate when that happens.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the accent you're giving.
I don't know where it is going.
He's from the Brooklyn part of Centralia, Kansas. I mean, there's like very little else here. They kind of like, they rescue this guy. Everyone likes each other. And then the mommy, the go-before, is like, hey, tell them about the other side of the planet you were telling me about that we should go move to right now.
Tell them about Worf. Tell them about the thing Worf did.
Tell them about the thing that Worf and Worf's brother did.
If we do that, we'll be saved.
Yeah.
What's the thing she said? We're rotting. An actually rotting. Accurate description. They had that word still.
That was pretty good. And then they say okay, and they just leave. And then they have dinner.
I was going to say, that's the thing I think Chad would like is dinner.
Chad would like them eating dinner. And then they're like, hey, Mayweather, you can write the official report.
You want some homework?
Do you want homework? Do you want to write the official report that'll run in the newspaper, I think, is the way they frame it?
I mean, these are all like Boy Scouts, so yeah, they would fucking love that.
Yeah, but they say the official report, but they also say it like the official report is a byline and would be like read by everybody on Earth. And it's like, I think, are you describing the newspaper?
Yeah.
What Archer?
Well, I don't know what the media space is like back on Earth. Do they only have state-run Starfleet news? Do they have a local paper still in Kansas, in
Clayton,
Oklahoma?
The Earth government in this program is so massively unexplored. I have no idea what the government is like. It's like post-World War III, but they have the Vulcans are around, and there is like an Earth space agency.
And there are farmers. That all these
jokers work for.
There are universities.
But also, capitalism still exists, I think.
Sort of.
But only kind of. I don't know. The show doesn't care as much as I do, which is a lot.
Because there has to be the point where it literally turns into a, like,
a post-scarcity communist society.
That, yeah.
I mean, on some level, that might happen after the original series, even, because the original series doesn't really talk about Earth's government too much either.
But I remember what they talked about in an earlier episode. They got rid of, like, bigotry and war.
Yeah, they deleted it from the human soul somehow using space.
But somehow we still have capitalism?
Yeah, that no one, I mean, again, this is not a thing where anyone's ever thought about how, say, you know, the existence of capitalism necessitates like both racialized and gendered underclasses and how it perpetuates these things in order to perpetuate itself. They're not interested. I don't think there's a lot of people reading that kind of literature on the writing staff of Star Trek Enterprise. I think they are trying to get their message out to a guy who's watching the show on one of those little tiny radios inside of a truck that fell into a sinkhole. So I think...
Well, the good news is that next week we finally get Shran.
Play the Shran stinger that I demand you create. Play Shran, just a siren for Shran alert. Shran incoming. Shran countdown is over. Shran en route. Save me, Shran. Shran, save me. Oh, bad episode. Also, episode looks like shit. They're just in a cave the whole time. Everyone's covered in mud.
I was going to say, it's like the low light is not doing it favors.
God, everyone's got like white person dreadlocks. From all the mud they live in.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's this piece of shit, dumb episode that I hated.
But hopefully you enjoyed this episode of Temporal Culture War. again, we will be back.
I sure did.
Me too. We will be back with a Shran full episode next week. Look forward to it. I am Clayton.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Next week, if you're listening to this next week, we'll have a new episode next week.
That's true.
You're Clayton Ashley, and I'm Maddie Lipchansky. What's the line he says? I can't remember.
Still don't remember it. Let's go.
Let's go.